Have you ever had a fist fight break out in the middle of history? Or had a math lesson that took 3 hours? Or taught spelling to a student standing on his head? You're not alone. It may be that boys are not the problem, but our attitudes and teaching methods make them look that way. In this challenging and encouraging workshop, Hal and Melanie Young share what they've learned from teaching their 6 sons, a spread from kindergarten to 12th grade. They call the process ballistic homeschooling, which you'll discover when you have your own school for boys. Let me ask you, just kind of get a feel for the group here. Is everybody here homeschooling, or is there anybody who's just thinking about it at the moment? Is there anyone that's just thinking? No, you're all in the... Oh, there's a couple. Okay,
right.
A couple of thinkers. Good. And I guess everybody else is in the trenches, right? We're all in the midst of this. Yeah, we're in the good fight together. And are we all homeschooling boys? Yeah? Okay, great. Yes, we're homeschooling lots of boys. All right. You want to just kick off? I tell you what. Tell me if this is your case, if this is the way it is in your home. Our boys, and it's been like you could set the calendar by it, when they turn 9 years old, all the wheels fall off.
They fall apart.
They come apart. There's something about 9 years old. And the good news is, cut to the chase here, they do grow out of it. But
when our oldest son hit 9, it's like suddenly he couldn't keep his shoes tied or his pants zipped or his shirt tucked in, and it'd take him like 3 hours to do math. Mm-hmm. Does that happen at your house?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just dragging it out all day. And, you know, really becomes kind of hard to live with.
Yeah, you wonder how did 10-year-olds get past the, you know, how do you get past fourth grade in the public school system? I mean, if, you know, we're having all of this trouble, you know, what are they doing in the classrooms? Well, you know, that's part of the story.
They're not listening. But, you know, we were going through a really distracted time with my oldest son. He was driving me crazy. I'm a kind of fanatic homeschooler, you know. I like things like Latin and history and art and all those extra things. We couldn't get through Bible and reading and math. I mean, it was horrible. It was a nightmare. Well, one night we're in the van, and Hal and I are Gilbert and Sullivan fans. I don't know if any of y'all are Savoyards. Well, we were singing the Major General song. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, yes. I am the very model of the modern Major General. I have information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the... See, I have to look at the word now. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo.
In order categorical,
yes. I'm very well acquainted, too, with mathematical. I understand equations, both the simple and quadratical.
About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news.
With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
I'm very good at integral and differential calculus.
I know the scientific names of beings animalculous.
In short, in matters animal, vegetable, and mineral...
I am the very model of a modern Major General.
Well, John burst out, and I don't know what appealed to him about that, but he said, I can't wait till I learn all that stuff. Well, I lost it. I said, well, you will if you ever get out of the fourth grade. And he said, What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Well, what she meant was, if she had to, she could drag him through fourth grade math. She wasn't going to be able to drag him through differential calculus. Sooner or later, our sons have got to wake up and realize that this schooling is not something that they've just got to get over and get on with life, but this is preparation for what they're going to do.
This isn't just about, can I keep Mama off my back? But it's about preparing them for real life. And you know, the next morning, John said, could you give me a list of like what you expect me to do each day? I said, sure. I didn't expect anything to come of it. He got it all done. For the first time, like, ever, at least since he turned 9, you know. And I learned a few things that day. I learned that boys really need to know why they're doing things. They really need to have a goal. They need to know that school is not going to last forever. What's the point of finishing math if you think your mama's just going to come up with something else for you to do? You know, I learned there were some things going on between me and him that I didn't get, that I didn't understand. And they were coming between me educating him and between us and having some peace in our home, too.
Of course, you're a lot like him. He's a lot like you.
Oh, yeah.
Very much so. But, you know, even if you are a lot like your sons, husbands, you know, fathers, mothers, whatever, even if you have a lot in common, there's some things particularly that mom and son may not be able to connect on. there's some differences in the way men think and the way women think, even if it's mom and her son.
Yeah, John and I are just alike. And so it kind of surprised me to realize that I was not connecting with him on school. You know, it was a real way to think. And, you know, if you have girls first especially, it can be a real eye-opening experience to start homeschooling those boys. Because, see, you think you are a model homeschooler. Oh, I'm such a good homeschooler. I mentor other moms. And then you have a son and you find out that you don't know anything at all about homeschooling. And in fact, you wonder, that yellow bus going down the road that you never thought you would ever consider starts looking really attractive some days.
Some days it does.
You know, it does.
Let me tell you a little bit of story. You know, we were some of those people that we made the decision to homeschool our kids before we had kids. Okay, that's optimism, right? And, you know, some of the first books we read were the names?
The Moores.
The Moores. Raymond and Dorothy Moore. You know, and they were really big on the research that said, you know, boys develop later than girls, okay? And that's part of the problem the school systems have is because the girls sit down and they fill out all these worksheets and the boys, you know, they're flying their pencils like rockets because they're just not into that. And the Moores say, take it easy, take it slow. Boys don't develop so fast. And so when we held our first child, it was a son, we looked at each other like every parent, and we said, you know, he's a boy. He's going to develop more slowly. We must be careful not to press him too hard.
We've got to be patient.
We've got to be patient because he's going to be slow. Yeah.
Well.
Tell me about slow, Melanie.
Well, I was kind of surprised because when he was 3, all of his friends in our church were starting homeschooling. They were a couple of years older than he was. And he comes to me and says, I want to learn to read. And so I thought, oh, how cute. And I got him some preschool workbooks, and he said, what is this about? I want to learn how to read. And I thought, you're not supposed to be there yet. I was completely thrown off. Well, as the week he turned 4, we started doing some real phonics, and by the time he was 5, he was reading anything. I thought, hey, I got this under control. I am Mrs. Super Homeschooler, right? And it didn't help that we were already on the board of our local homeschool support group, you know.
That's what you get for reading ahead. That's what you get for doing a lot of reading.
Yeah. And then the next couple of boys, they were early readers too, very engaged. And then we got that son that we were supposed to be prepared for. Seriously dyslexic. I'm talking seriously dyslexic. We went through every phonics program out there. He learned to read when he was 9. And I felt like a complete failure homeschooler. And what I learned is, you know, there are some stereotypes, but your child is individual. And you can't say all boys do this,
right,
or all boys do that.
Right.
Because God creates us as individuals, not a particular class. All that said, it's really true that boys tend to mature more slowly in some areas than girls. And that's not that they mature more slowly in general, but in some areas. For example,
like we spoke about earlier, small motor skills, sitting down and filling out the little worksheets, okay?
My 5-year-old daughter would fill them out all day.
Oh,
she'd
live for
it.
I know, she's been right in the middle of things from the very start.
Yeah, from the time she was 2, she's like wanting to fill out worksheets, you know?
Okay. But boys, legitimately, typically, generally speaking, they develop the fine motor skills, like pushing a pencil across paper, later than the girls do. Now, what does that mean for your curriculum choices?
Well, that means that a lot of the very widely used curriculum in homeschooling may be perfectly wrong for your son.
It may be perfectly great for your daughter.
Especially if you're a type A personality that feels like you have to use everything and do everything the teacher's manual tells you to. There are some programs written for classrooms that are very devastating to boys when you try to do something like a Becca or Bob Jones that's written for a classroom and you're a type A personality like me and you feel like you have to get it all done, you're going to kill your little boy. He can't possibly do all that writing. He's not meant to. That teacher's book is what they use to help the teachers keep the children that are working too fast busy. They have all those extra worksheets that you can give those little girls that want to fill out a million worksheets. And they describe 8 different ways to teach the lesson in case they didn't get it the first time. Because if you've got a room of 30 kids, not every child is going to understand the first way you explain it. The teacher's manual was never meant for you to do all 50 ways to explain it.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Positive.
And 12 different worksheets. On the other hand, boys develop physical gross motor skills much faster than girls. So your little boy's 5, man, he is pitching that ball and hitting it right on the money. Okay? And he needs to use those big muscles. And the research shows that he actually learns better when he's used those big muscles, which is what why we're having a problem in the schools with boys right now, because they're getting rid of recess. And recess is now organized activity where everybody stands in line until they have a chance to throw the ball. And the boys are not using those big muscles. They're not using that energy. They come back to the classroom. They're wild. And we're surprised. We drug them. You don't have to do that at home.
Okay, so let me see if I get this straight. Now, we're talking about gross motor rather than fine motor. Mm-hmm. And so if we are really sensitive to our sons, they grow up using grease pencils and writing great big letters on sheets and no newsprint, right?
No.
Do they get over it?
They get over it. Okay. They grow out of it. In fact, that child, that boy that cries big, giant crocodile tears when you ask him to write one sentence, in a few years, he may be like our child who did that, who's out there, who's writing a novel. And he's got like, what, about 75,000 words now?
Something like that.
You know, they grow out of it, but you've got to realize that that's just an area that most boys are challenged in.
See, one thing we found out is when you're dealing with writing, sometimes the purpose of writing is the act of writing itself. You know, if you want your son to have legible handwriting, and, you know, God bless you on that, but you want your son to have legible handwriting, and so there's certain things that they're just going to have to do. But you know what we've discovered? You don't have to let handwriting hold up the rest of the world.
Right. For example, I was talking to a mom and she said, my son just hates science. And I said, what? That's most unusual. I said, well, what does he hate about it? She said, oh, he hates answering the end of the chapter questions and doing all that writing. I said, so why not do it orally? And she said, wouldn't that be cheating? I said, okay, what are you trying to teach him with this book? Science. Okay, do you have a writing program? Oh, yes. Then what's the problem here? Because why should we allow his slow growth to maturity in one area limit what he's learning in science? You know, if you need to do it orally, if you need to get him an MP3 of his textbook, like Apology is cool, they have MP3s of the different textbooks, that's great. Because why should he, because he's struggling to write, not soar in science? Because you're not teaching how to write there.
Mm-hmm. You know, an interesting thing that came up in our reading, I'm a history buff, and I read a book about the Confederate chaplains during the war between the states. And one of the things that this pastor noticed as he was visiting the camps and the hospitals was a high degree of illiteracy. Lots and lots of the men just couldn't read a word. And so here they are. They got time on their hands. And so the chaplains and some of the other soldiers were helping coach them, teaching them their letters, teaching them, you know, the old-fashioned way, phonics and everything. And you know, what they found is usually those men in like 3 or 4 months could learn to read and would be able to start reading the Bible for themselves. That's the King James Version. No living New Testament at those times, okay? We're talking complex Elizabethan English.
From don't recognize their letters to reading the King James Version in a matter of months.
So they do catch up.
And so don't panic. If you have a child like my dyslexic son, I worried that child to death and worried myself to death, and I really regret it. Because, you know, when he learned to read, he soared ahead. You know, he's 13 now, so he's been reading 4 years. Now, my child who was reading it, when he learned to read at 4, by the time he was 8, you know, he was reading, you know, what a 9 or 10-year-old could read. But my child who's 13, who's been reading 4 years, who started reading at 9, can read what college students read. Because as your mind matures, it doesn't, if you learn to read at 9, it doesn't take 4 years to make 4 grade levels progress. You can learn much more quickly as mind is more developed. And so don't panic if you've got one of those. Don't harass yourself and get nauseous every day and make him nauseous every day over school. You know, be faithful. Keep him on track in all the other subjects. And you can at home. That's what's so beautiful and what's so different about putting a boy in the schools. Because a boy that's a slow reader in the schools, if he's not reading on grade level, he will be put at the grade level that he's reading at in most cases. Whereas at home, you know, by the time my child learned to read at 9, he was bang on grade level and everything else. Because if he had a math word problem, I read it to him, or one of his brothers read it to him. And so he was even above grade level in math. You know, and so you can meet their needs and keep them on grade level in other things, even beyond grade level, let them soar in the things they're good at, as long as you have the confidence to do it, not to panic.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are legitimate documented differences in the way that boys learn and the ways that girls learn. And we're talking about some things here that we've observed ourselves. But there are some things like, there's a gentleman by the name of Dr. Leonard Sachs. He is with the National Association for Single-Sex Public Education or something like that. I believe that's his organization. But he's collected this research. He's got a lot of it on his website. And there's a lot of things that boys are sensitive to that girls respond to entirely different. Like, can I tell the story?
Yes, please do.
Okay. Our oldest son is in college, okay? And we were looking around at liberal arts colleges in the immediate area, neighboring states. And somebody said, well, you need to go take a look at Hampton Sydney College in Virginia. Okay. It's an all-male school. There's not many of them left.
Okay. There's 3 left in the United States.
Well, we went to go visit. They had a great economics department. We liked visiting with the professors. The facilities are great. It's an old school. Patrick Henry's kids went there. Okay. So it's been a while. And one of the things that John got to do was to sit in on economics class. He came back and he was so pumped up. Because he said, oh man, this was great. So the professor, like, he called them boneheads, and they shouted back at him, and they were, it was just incredible, the interaction in the class.
And I'm like, and this is good, how?
Yeah, but you know, you could see in the interaction, the students come in and out of the professor's office, and you go read, you know, ratemyprofessor.com and all the stuff they post online. They love this guy. Even though, you know, a nice young lady like this sitting in his classroom would be ducking her head.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is abusive. But yeah. The guys interacted with it great, okay? That's something they're sensitive to. They like it to be loud. They like it to be emphatic. They want to be drawn into it.
Yes, they want it to be animated. They want to compete. They want it to be competitive. And see, these are things that are very alien to us moms. Because I'm like, okay, let's play a game, but no one will win and no one will lose. That way we'll all be happy. And the boys are like, and so why are we doing this?
Oh, what's the
yeah.
point?
Yeah, the boys are like, you lost me. You know, what's the point? You know, boys are different. And it's not a good difference, bad difference. It's different. God created them differently. Mm-hmm. And so we need to get it in our heads as mothers. And this is so important. We need to think about what we're raising. We are not trying to make our lives more convenient and more pleasant, ladies.
That is not in the job description.
I don't see that anywhere in Scripture. Mm-mm. In raising our children. It would be very convenient and pleasant if boys liked to clean up, and if they liked to color within the lines, and if they sat quietly, and they made beautiful pictures, wouldn't it? It ain't gonna happen. If it does, you've done violence to your son.
And okay. Now think about it. Think about what the schools are having to deal with right now. And think about the lower and lower matriculation rates of young men going to college, and the lower and lower graduation rates. And, you know, look at what's the adage that they give you in business? What gets rewarded gets done. What gets rewarded in the classroom? You just said it. Sit still, be quiet, color within the lines. And, you know, have you ever seen a YouTube video of a dog sitting with a corn chip on his nose, and he's staring at that corn chip saying, please let me have the corn chip, please let me have the corn chip. But the dog will sit there because he's trained. And our sons may be trained, but it ain't natural for the dog, and it's not real natural for most boys either.
And you know what? A boy can sit still for a time. He can listen to a sermon. He can get what he needs to out of it. But you know, but then you don't take him from the sermon and say, okay, now let's go home and take a nap. Okay? You've got to realize the way he's made. And we women especially have got to realize, you know, the things we respect and honor in men, risk-taking, ambition, boldness, courage, fortitude, endurance, those things make really awesome men, are very messy in little boys. Mm-hmm. Very messy indeed. And if you keep in your mind what you want him to be as a man, it'll make you more patient with the way that comes out in boyhood, because you've got to make yourself, women, You've got to train your sons and not tame your sons. Because God has an awesome work for them to do. And you don't want to make them so fearful. I heard from a mom this week who is in a complete panic all the time that her boys are going to get hurt. I mean, she gets physically ill if they bruise themselves. Well, she is making her sons miserable. She is miserable. And she's taking something away from them that's going to be very important for what God wants them to do as men.
You know, we did a presentation at a conference a while back, and a father came up to us afterwards. And a lot of times when we're talking about, you know, teaching boys, it's the moms who are saying, please tell me. But this father was there, and he came up and spoke with Melanie afterwards, and he said, you know what you're talking about is right on target. Because he said, I grew up in an environment in our family that we were so adverse to taking any risk, so adverse to any possibility of failure or embarrassment or having to start over from scratch, that he said, I'm a grown man and I can't move. My ambition is completely thwarted. I can't take a considered gamble in business or in work or in life because I'm fearful of it.
And listen, serving the Lord is all about risk-taking. Trust is all about risk-taking. And so we have to keep in mind what we're trying to produce. And that means you take into account who they are and what they are. Boys do not hear the human voice as well as girls.
Okay, can I get a witness on that? Boys do not hear very well.
And so you say, son, I need you to do something. Son, are you deaf? And he looks up and he says, were you talking to me? Honestly, he probably did not hear you. Mm-hmm. I mean, research supports they do not hear the human voice as well as girls do because God designed girls to be about relationship, to be nurturing mothers, to hear what the children are doing in the next room, right?
Isn't it uncanny? I mean, she hears the baby and she knows what the baby wants. She knows what the baby is trying to say. She said, oh, the baby is talking now. So, no, the baby's babbling. No, the baby's talking. The moms get this. We guys don't.
Okay? And on the other hand, moms don't get that what their son may need is, son, get his attention. Look at me. I need you to do this. You know? Because he's made differently because God made him to ignore distraction to get his job done.
You know, one of my favorite movies is The Incredibles. I love that film. There's so many layers in it. And there's that scene in the early part of the movie where Bob, you know, Mr. Incredible, he comes home from work and he's all burdened up with stuff from the job. And he sits down at the table and the kids are going bananas all over the place and his wife is trying to, you know, corral him in and he's just totally oblivious. And she finally has to say, Bob, it's time to engage. You know, and it's like waking him up. What? And it's funny It's funny because that's me. You know, if the kids come up to me and I'm working on the computer or something, then they say, Dad, what about this and another? I haven't had a problem. So, you know, I may answer them. I may have a conversation. And they walk away and my mind goes and erases it. I mean, it's gone. If I didn't take my eyes off the screen and say, I'm now attending to you. Now I've got your attention. You got my attention. Okay, tell me. If I don't do that, I don't get it. You know, our sons are the same way. And it's maybe as simple as saying, it's time to put out the dog. It may be, I'm trying to explain this math to you. Will you please concentrate?
And, you know, if God made men to ignore distraction, of course, distractions are going to be something that tempt them, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of you have a guy like this. I have a guy who is, he's a wonderful child. Love him so much. But he moves constantly. And he's really easily distracted. And he'll come up and he'll say, Mom, I really don't understand how to set up this division problem. You see, if you take 362, look at that bird. In the middle, he interrupts his own sentences with distraction. You know, and what's so frustrating is sometimes those guys who are so easily distracted are driven crazy by the other people. And so he's sitting there saying, and he's banging his foot, and he's tapping his pencil, and, you know, he's humming a song that's different than the beat of his foot, okay? And different than the tapping, too. And I'm like, my skin's crawling. And suddenly he pushes his hair back and he says, can you make them be quiet? They're driving me crazy. Now, when I point out to him, son, you're making all the noise in the room, he always feels really bad. Oh, I'm sorry, Mom. Gosh, I didn't realize what I was doing. Well, he really didn't realize what he was doing. Our sons have to be taught, you're responsible for what your body does. You need to pay attention to what your body's doing. You need to clue in. You need to find some quiet ways to keep moving if you've got other children in the room. Maybe something to squeeze, you know? Maybe get him to run up and down the stairs a few times. You know, when I start losing my sons, I'll say, give me 10 on the stairs. Run up and down the stairs 10 times, they come back much more teachable. You know, because they need to move those big muscles. It's like, have you ever really overdone it in caffeine? Like, did you ever decide to have a cup of coffee and a big, like, mud cake at supper or something with a lot of, you went out to eat and you had a bunch of chocolate and you get ready for bed and you're just like, I think our boys are like that most of the time.
Yeah. It doesn't take chemical enhancement.
No, it doesn't.
No. And, you know, that is part of the reason that hyperactivity is a problem with young boys. You know, you don't hear about hyperactive girls, do you? I mean, honestly, there's a few, but you don't hear ADHD assigned to Susanna. It's always assigned to David or, you know, Matthew or Joseph or somebody. And, you know, there are medical conditions that do need treatment, but, you know, a lot of it...
But in some school districts, 40% of boys are on those drugs.
Yeah, we're all defective. Incredible.
No.
Isn't incredible.
God made them energetic because they're supposed to be conquering the world. They're supposed to be out there working in the harvest, working hard and working fast to accomplish the will of God.
And that's the folly of canceling recess, okay?
It really is.
That's the problem, because they need to get out, move those muscles, burn off some of that energy.
And so don't drive yourself crazy saying, I'm not letting you up till we finish this math. And then math lasts all the way through lunch. You know, no. When you start losing him, say, okay, son, I want you to see how many push-ups you can do in 1 minute. You know, make it competitive. Man, then he's pumping, and then he's ready to sit down. You know, use it. You know, use that competitive spirit. You know, say, like one of my favorite things with my boys, and I hope they're not listening, I hope they went shopping. One of my favorite things is I say, okay, anyone who gets a personal best time on a fact sheet or a lesson, if you finished your lesson last week in 45 minutes, if you finish it in 44, you get a treat. It's just that little bit of competition. Man, one jelly bean they'll work their heart out for. You know, just because they want to win. Because God made men to want to test their strength against each other. And really, it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. That's how men get stronger. Remember, iron sharpens iron?
Well, it may be wrestling in the yard. You know, it may be running laps around the house or something. But you can use that competition academically.
Absolutely.
I read an interesting story from the Wall Street Journal. Karl Rove was talking to the reporter, and he said, just mentioned in the course of the conversation, that he and President Bush, George W. Bush, had kind of an ongoing contest with each other, who could read the most books in a year. And remember, Bush, I mean, people laugh at George Bush, but he had a degree in history from Yale, okay? He wasn't stupid. And he read a lot, and Karl Rove read a lot, and they kept this thing going on all year long. Oh, what book? I'm on number 26. I'm on 28. I'm ahead of you, you know? And this is... like, in the highest offices of the land, they're having this like fraternity challenge going on. Who can read the most books this year? And they did it for years. This went on during a lot of the administration. So, you know, you can bring that kind of competition into things.
And make it a lot more fun for your boys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because once you start really enjoying how God made them, appreciating that He made them for a purpose, that, you know, every time they cross the threshold, they come back dirty, you know, if men couldn't handle dirt, what would have happened in World War I when they had to be in those trenches to stop tyranny? You know, we want men to be able to handle dirt. We want men to be strong. We want them to be competitive. We want them to have endurance. We want them to exhibit the manly virtues, but we as women have got to understand, A, what the manly virtues are. What does biblical manhood look like? And then we've got to decide that we're not just trying to make our boys into little girls. And I know most of us, our hearts break at the thought, but isn't that what we're doing day after day when we say, why can't you do this like your sister? You know that?
And I hope you never say it, but you might actually think it some days.
Yeah, some days I'm sure you do. Some days I think, you know, man, she just cleaned up her mess. Never seen that happen before. This is my seventh child. You know?
Yeah. And our baby got into a box full of plastic spoons before we left, and we walked in, and she's gathering them all up and putting
and them
away.
Them up. Like,
gosh.
Whoa, that's strange. How did you see that?
I didn't know our children could do that.
Yeah,
that's
I didn't
cool.
either. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, interesting. You're talking about dirt. Let's talk about environment.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about the classroom environment. There's some interesting things that came out of research, and there are some interesting things going on in certain schools, private schools in particular. They have found that boys sometimes can concentrate better if they're not sitting in the desk. Like, for example, let's take this from history. This is interesting. When I was just a little guy, well, even when I was little, I was big, but when I was a younger guy, let's say, my parents took me to, I think it was Williamsburg or maybe it was Monticello, but at any rate, the museum we were in had Thomas Jefferson's desk. And you know what? It was like this. He didn't
standing
have a chair.
Desk.
It was a standing desk. He stood up to write.
You know, it's okay to do math standing at the kitchen counter.
Winston Churchill wrote over 10 million words himself, mostly pacing around the room, dictating to a secretary. Oops, that's the handwriting thing. Don't get those confused. But anyway, the point being, you can do serious scholarly work, and it doesn't have to be sitting down in a desk with the light coming over your left shoulder and your feet flat on the floor. You know?
In fact, boys tend to like the environment brighter. Girls like things kind of soft, muted lighting. Boys like it bright. Girls like it warm. Boys like it cool. Boys like to have the air moving. Moms hate air moving. Like, oh, there's a draft. Somebody, who put the fan on? You know?
Who turned it off?
Yeah. And as we understand these things, and you may think, well, I've got boys and girls. Well, you know, your girl can be put next to the heater. Boy can be put next to the window. You know, they understand that these environmental things, you know, if you make things comfortable for yourself, your boy may be asleep. Okay? Because it's warm and dark, and, you know, that's what we do.
You know, that's a really nice thing about home education, because we're not locked into an institutional mold. And I come from many generations of teachers, okay? So I'm not here to throw things at the public school system. But just frankly, in a classroom environment, managing a classroom with boys and girls and different, you know, levels of understanding and all, they got to shoot for the middle of that bell curve. And that means there's a lot of people on either side of where they're shooting that are not getting an optimal experience. You don't have to do that.
And that's what's really cool, because our culture does not value manhood right now. There is no take your boy to work day, right? There's no take your son to work day. What does that say to your sons? I'll tell you what it's saying to sons. Did you know in 1970, and that was hardly a pinnacle of American civilization, folks. That was after the hippie 60s and the, you know, acid trips and all that, right? 70% of 30-year-old men at that time had a career and family. Today, less than a third do.
Anybody want to guess what percentage of 26-year-old men are still living with mom and dad?
20%.
20%
of 26-year-old men still live with mommy and daddy. Something has gone far, far wrong in our raising of boys. But you can do differently with your sons. We can raise sons that can be leaders. We can raise sons that can be what God intended for men to be. But, you know, we're going to have to aim it in their direction. We're going to have to be prepared to deal with them. For example, one of the biggest distinctives about teaching boys is boys want to know why. Why am I having to do this? What is the purpose? What is the goal? For example, one thing I've noticed, when Hal and I speak, we speak all over the place. We're going to Colorado, Kansas, Missouri in the next few months. One thing I've noticed is that the women want to come to the practical sessions. The women want you to tell me, okay, tell me, how do I teach math? And the men want to go to the philosophical sessions. Mm-hmm. Men want to hear, okay, tell me about these principles of raising boys. And that's why Hal and I speak together. That way moms and dads both come. Because seriously, I've noticed looking out here at the audience, when I talk about principles, the dads light up. When I talk about practicalities, the women light up. And your sons are made to be the vision setters for their home. God made them to cast the vision for their home, to lead their home, to think about the big ideas.
And let me tell you, I read something recently. It just kind of startled me. They were researching like young kids. We're talking like 5, 6, 7-year-olds. And they were trying to encapsulate, well, what really motivates these young students? And when they put it down, they put it down in academic terms, but if you step back a little bit so the picture clears up, suddenly I heard 1,000 conversations in offices where I've worked, where the men, either around the water cooler or in the conference room, they're saying, one way or another, tell me why this is relevant. Tell me why I need to be spending my time here. You know, why are we spending this time? How many times have we asked ourselves that in a meeting? What is it all about? And go ahead and impress me.
Yeah.
Okay? I challenge you, whoever's speaking, impress me.
Yeah, when we walk into a session where there's hundreds of men, the women all sit leaning forward a little bit. They want to engage you. They want to get to know you. The men are every one of them. Every one of them sitting like this.
They do.
When we come in.
It's okay. You can keep your hands where you are.
It's okay.
Don't anybody move.
But it's the truth, because they're saying, okay, I want to hear what you got to say. I'm going to judge it.
I'm going to think about it.
You know? Okay. And that's the way God made us, and it's a good thing. But this makes discussion of ideas with your boys absolutely paramount.
Even if they're six.
Even if they're six.
Even if they're seven, even if their shoes are untied.
When you watch a movie with your boys, you need to be asking them, what is the theme? What is the message? What are they trying to teach you through this movie? You hear a song. What is the song trying to teach you? What is this about? Now, I don't want to hear the plot. What's the message? The Incredibles.
Like The Incredibles.
The Incredibles. You can watch that movie, you can think, oh, well, Mom, this movie is about this really neat family that's special skills and they fight this bad guy. No. I don't hear the topic. What's the message? And you keep talking with them until they understand that the message of The Incredibles is that you should be content with the gifts God has given you and use them in the wisest way possible. The whole problem in that movie, the whole central problem, focused on a young man who was not content with the way he'd been made. Okay? And trying to make the incredible family into something they weren't. Mm-hmm. Okay, so as our sons begin to understand the messages and the things around them and to think about ideas, then they become discerning and wise. And that's what we want.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. So, how about some real problems?
Getting schoolwork done. Getting them to finish in a day.
True.
And that's where that goal vision stuff comes in. Mm-hmm. Because they need to know why they're doing it. Like, boys love, like, Jacob's geometry. Because it's all real world problems. And they want to say, oh, that's why I'm learning geometry. And well, some things you can't do that.
There's some things you can't. Some things, honest to goodness, I went through a lot of my college thinking of it as a grid of boxes to check off. And when I got enough boxes checked off, they give me a piece of paper and I go out and earn big bucks. Okay, that's what college is for, right? No. And I repented of that. But that's where I was. But you know, actually, sometimes it is checking off a box. Sometimes you have to go through this gate or jump through that hoop in order to access the one you really want to go through back in the future.
So my son, who's really not about math but wants to be an engineer, I say, are you aware that you cannot get a degree in engineering unless you have had calculus?
And you're not going to have calculus until you finish trig, which is going to follow after algebra.
And so you better get your algebra done, son. Yeah. But that gives him motivation. So suddenly he says, okay, I want to take a class at community college this spring. Well, what do you want to take, son? I'd like to take math. I'd like to take pre-calculus. What? Because he had a goal now, a purpose. And sons need purpose. They need goals. A couple other things that kind of throw us for a loop with boys is sometimes stress is good. Have you ever seen a boy bite his lip while he works? Research shows that pain is distracting to women and focusing for men. And so sometimes a boy bites his lip or chews on his knuckle to help him concentrate. Seems very weird to me. It's the truth. Sometimes the stress of a timed test is very motivating to a boy. It helps him clarify his thoughts. You know, mom thinks, oh, it's so hard. You know, I won't time you, honey. He's like, so why finish? Why do it?
And how many times have you heard your coworker or yourself say things like, I work better under pressure? I've heard that a lot. I've been very productive under pressure myself sometimes.
In general, men are, and that's all right. Sometimes we need to put some artificial pressure on our sons. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of being what it's very tempting, and you know, our soft-heartedness, saying, "Oh, I understand you're busy. You don't have to do that." You know, and that's very hard for me. I don't like to see my children do without. You know.
Mm-hmm. Of course, now one thing you have to deal with guys too is the male ego, mm-hmm. right? You got to deal with something that we talk about sometimes. That is pride. Okay, it's just a part of the male psyche is to be proud.
Have you ever asked your boy, "Son, just come to me if you need help"? How long did you wait?
You'll never see him again. That's part of the guy code, right? It's on page 3. It says never send an SOS.
Never.
Okay.
And so you got to find out ways for them to get help without coming and asking mom for help. Like one thing we finally learned after, like, on child's 5 or 6, I don't know, mm-hmm. is that I can say, if you have trouble with a problem, just write the problem number at the top and we'll go over those later. Well, he's okay with writing the problem number at the top, and then he comes to me and I can say, well, let's talk about problem 45. And he never has to say, I don't understand how to do this. Very hard for a young man. Very, very hard for a teenage young man to say to his mother, I don't understand how to do this. Okay. Now, that's a life skill. He needs to learn that. But in the meantime, he's got to learn how to do this, right? And so you can do these things to spare him a little bit and to get the job done. And getting the job done is important. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had children who, we really stress teaching independence. You know, I think by the time a son is in high school, he should be mainly doing his work on his own. You know, the vast majority of the time. Because when he gets to college, he's going to have to. You know, John is at Washington and Lee University, and it's a very academically rigorous school. And many of his professors will give 1 or 2 grades a semester. You know, and they might say, okay, you're going to have a paper, it's due November 20th, and he doesn't mention it again until November 19th, where he says, okay, I'm picking up papers tomorrow. You know, your sons have got to learn to work on their own and to be independent. It's a gift to them. But sometimes they try to get away with things. They say, oh, I don't know how to do this. Mom's busy, I won't bother her. I'll just skip it. And they skip it and skip it and skip it until mom has time to check it, which might be 3 weeks later if you have an 11th grader, right? And that's what you want to avoid. That's what you got to teach them. You've got to teach them, it's got to be done. You need to let me know what you need help with. That's a really easy way, is to just, you know, jot a note down. But if you do teach your children to be independent learners, if you teach your boys to take as much responsibility as possible, as early as possible, and that's what we've tried to do, is ask yourself, what is the youngest child that can do this? Can he handle this? And sometimes he's going to fail, but it's important for your sons to learn how to fail. Because, you know, that's what's wrong with a lot of these young men who are living at home with mom and dad. They're afraid of the world.
This was an interesting thing. Somebody asked us, or a comment that came up when we were talking with a radio host recently. He said, you know, I've got daughters. And he said, I told my daughters that there are 3 things that are absolutely required of any man that comes here wanting to court you. Say, number one, he's got to be a man. I can't assume anything these days. Number one, he's got to be a man. Number two, he's got to love the Lord. Okay, I'm raising you as Christians, and you've got to marry somebody who's a Christian. And number three, I want to know how he has failed. Because he said one of 2 things is true. Either he has never failed, in which case he's probably got an attitude and he's cruising for a really bad fall somewhere. He's not going to know how to handle it. Or else he has failed, and then he's either been able to pick himself up and start over and do the manly thing, or else he said, that's it, I'm a waste. And I got to know, how do you deal with failure? And I thought, man, that's profound. That's profound because, you know, the kids that come up through the schools and they're all told that they're special and you're all above average and your self-esteem is important to us and all the rest of that, that's great. And you can look at the studies that say that American school kids' math skills are in a tailspin, but man, their self-esteem is high. They like themselves, you know.
And they believe their math skills are the best.
But you know what? When they graduate and they go out to work, guess what? There's winners and there's losers, just like there used to be on the playground.
They better produce.
And you better know how to win, but they also better know, what do you do when you don't?
And so we moms, I think, feel guilty mm-hmm. if we don't hover enough, you know. I feel guilty. I feel like, oh, I haven't spent enough time with Caleb, my 17-year-old, this week. But really, for Caleb's good, it's good that he's learning to stand on his own two feet. And so as your children move into middle school, through middle school, into high school, I'm not talking 7-year-olds. 7-year-olds, mom better be on top of them or they're gone, okay? But by the time your son is 14, 15, 16, he should be doing most of his work on his own. You should be advising and consulting and answering questions while he is learning to dig that stuff out by himself. Because you know what? If he learns how to do that, he can learn absolutely anything. He can teach himself anything. My grandfather left school in the 8th grade. He's one of the most well-read men I ever knew. He taught it all to himself. If we teach our sons how to learn, teach them to take responsibility. First of all, with your sons, please understand, they will learn to be independent. You want to help them push them to take responsibility as early as they can, even beyond what they're comfortable with. Okay, so that they're reaching back for advice instead of foolishly pushing you and your wisdom away to try to get room to be a man. You know, boys and girls are made by God to be different. That impacts how they learn and how they manage learning.
And unfortunately, most of the schoolrooms are being led by young women who were rewarded.
And raised in a feminist environment.
Who were rewarded for the sitting still, coloring in the lines type of approach and mentality. And frankly, most moms were rewarded for that too, were you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we're rewarded, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And so it behooves us to take into account that maybe that's not the only way to learn. In fact, maybe that's just not the way boys learn.
Keep your eyes on what you want your sons to become. Because there's a lot of interplay going on between our own upbringing, our education, our desires, and what our boys need. But if we understand, if we have a vision of what we want him to become, and we have an understanding of how he's different than we are and what he needs, then we'll all be a whole lot happier in our home education. Because, you know, we really are trying to raise godly warriors for Christ. We don't want men who are unable to leave home at 26, or like the young man that I heard of who said, oh, I can't go to college, I might lose my values. He was 24. By 24, a man should be able to stand on his own feet. He should be able to stand up to anything. And we want our sons to. And so keep your eyes on the prize. Keep your eyes on the kind of man you want him to become. And understand the differences between you and him and between his sisters and him. And value them. Value them. Because not much in this world is going to value your sons. And if he understands that you're glad he's a young man, going to empower him and enrich him and strengthen him to become the kind of man you want him to be.
Amen. And so if you have any questions, we'd like to open up the floor. Feel free to ask anything that may be on your mind or heart. It's all you first, ma'am.
I just want to know, what is the reason why boys have to be so messy? Is it wrong to try to teach them to pick up after themselves? Because I'm thinking of their wives.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's wrong to teach them to pick up after themselves, but to expect them to want to, and to expect them to remember, you're probably barking up the wrong tree. Because, you know, Hal doesn't see it. You know, I'll say, oh, the house is driving me crazy. So what are you talking about? Well, you know, the laundry, it's everywhere. And you say, oh, you know, God didn't make them that way. And so, yes, all of our sons have chores. Our oldest 6 are boys. And so they rotate through all the chores. We have, every day we have a cook of the day, someone who takes care of dishes, someone who takes care of the den where much of our home schooling goes, and it's always a mess. And someone who does laundry. And our boys rotate through those because our little girls are old enough. And they're expected to do their chores every day. I do not expect them to like it, to enjoy it, to find fulfillment in folding clothes. They're just not going to do it. You know? They don't, and they may never really see it like you do. Now, do reward initiative and speak in the terms of manly virtue. You know, son, you know, that, like, I came upstairs and my bed was made yesterday. And, you know, it was my 6-year-old boy that instigated it. And I said, thank you for taking that initiative, for looking and seeing something need to be done and doing it. Thank you, that was great. But, you know, do I expect him to do it every day? No, it's not going to happen. But, you know, we have things he is expected to do every day, but they're on a list where, that he can look at and check off, you know? More questions? And we'll take anything. We've been doing radio interviews. We've done 40 radio interviews in the past 2 months, and we'll take all covers.
All right. Oh, you've got another one, sure.
Sorry.
No,
that's
no.
Right.
No, go ahead.
Sometimes you may want to do that, but, you know, he's got to learn there's work that's got to be done. And, you know, we had a celebration for our 13-year-old who, when our sons turn 13, we have a celebration that they're becoming young men. And we change our expectations. You're no longer a child, you're a young man. We try to treat him that way. And my elderly uncle, my uncle, sent a letter to my son, and he said, you know, son, I want you to learn to work before play. It's very important as a man to get your work done and then take your play time. And I think it's appropriate to teach our sons that. You get this done, you're outside. If you get it done at 9 a.m., goodbye. You know?
Yeah, and we got to hold it to them. I mean, and that's hard.
It's,
you know,
hard
because
we're so busy.
The flexibility and the freedom that we have as homeschoolers, I mean, yeah, we could go out and do school in the treehouse if we want. I mean, we do have this incredible freedom. And sometimes we have to discipline ourselves to be the heavy, you know, somebody's got to be the grown-up in this picture. And, you know, I had to do this past week. You know, the boys had some big social event planned in the evening, and I told them, hey, guys, you know, I said, guys, you know, you've got the list right here. You know all day long this is expected. I got to see this done before you leave. Well, it got to be about time to leave. And I'm saying, fellas, you know, the kitchen is a wreck. You and you are responsible. You're not leaving. Oh, suddenly there's a burst of energy and the diligence just like blossoming like flowers. And they did more. If they worked that hard all day long, I mean, gosh, we could like be flipping houses or something and be rich. It's incredible. But, you know, they said, oh, okay, I got to do this, you know, work before play, like she said.
And
they did it. Bam. One of the brothers said.
The passive-aggressive one, yeah.
one of the brothers kind of said, well, you know, it's too much, too much.
He was the driver, and he thought we wouldn't be mean enough to keep his brothers at home because he didn't do something.
Ooh, 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 I got a driver's license.
Hal drove him.
I drove him.
Left him at home. He was shocked, horrified, but he got it done. Got it done that night.
And he got to go a little bit late.
Yeah, he went late. It did him a world of good, though.
But you do have to hold on to that, and sometimes it means, hey, gosh, Dad's got to be a meanie, Mom's got to be mean.
It's really hard for me. You know, I'm thinking, oh, but his friends are all there, and they're depending on him, and, you know, I think their band was supposed to play tonight. They have a Celtic Christian band, and, oh. And Hal said, honey, do you want the house kept like it you say or not? And I was like, okay, can you deal with it?
Yep.
Did you have the experience that when you're teaching your boys, and this would be obviously self-referential, you can tell them to do it, you can tell them how to do it, but you can't tell them both. You can give them a task or you can give them a process, but you can't, like, my wife will often say, we need to be someplace, or she will tell me how to get there, but if she tells me both, I go completely off the deep end.
Well, you know, you can't tell a boy, sweep the floor and expect it to be cleaned.
Right.
Because they will run the broom around, and they'll say, I swept the floor.
Yeah, see, that was, yeah. You gave him a process. You said,
yep.
Drive the broom.
Right, so right. They drove the broom around. Never mind that, you know, they didn't seem to actually get anything up.
Yeah,
and
so.
You said, you will be eating off the floor tonight. Make sure you are capable of doing that?
I'm not sure they would care. But if I said, your sister's going to eat off the floor and it's not clean for your sister. But yeah, boys don't like to be micromanaged. And you've got to teach them the right way to do things. But as soon as they can handle it, back off. Let them take responsibility. And if they fail, then pull them back, rein them back in, and let them know it was plainly because they failed. You know, you couldn't handle this responsibility. I'm giving you less responsibility. And, you know, give them a little bit more the next time when they show themselves able.
We got one of our sons who very early on showed a lot of interest in the kitchen. He wanted to cook. And Melanie is a very good cook. And you know, I think, turn this 9-year-old loose in my kitchen. I don't know about this. Well, I mean, she has very challenging pregnancies. And
shortly, bed rest every time.
Shortly after this, bang, she's on bed rest, and it's not going to happen. You know, if I was working a lot of overtime at the time. And so, well, guess what? He got his wish. He got to fix breakfast every morning. And you know what? Some days, it didn't go well. Some days did not go well. But this very wise woman here, you know, thanked him for cooking breakfast, did her best to eat it, and all the rest of that. And then afterwards say, hey, let's talk about tomorrow's breakfast, and gave him some coaching then. You know, it wasn't like, you know, this poor kid.
Tell me what you did wrong with this. No.
Yeah, it wasn't like this poor kid, you know, has scrapped together whatever he could scrape off the bottom of the pan and maybe not all of the burned part stuck. And you know, brought it in, and he's already halfway shattered. And Mom says, ugh. Even though that might have been her reaction. But, I mean, she said, okay, thank you for the, you know, for fixing breakfast and all. But then dealt with the process part later.
And then later, maybe that night, I say, hey, by the way, have I ever told you how I make omelets?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me tell you how I learned how I make omelets. Yeah, you know, and describe it to him. Well, hey, that guy can make the most awesome omelets.
Oh, he is an excellent cook.
In fact, he went to the state level of 4-H competition making omelets. Right. You know, because of that winter he spent making me breakfast. You know, I had gestational diabetes, so I couldn't eat cereal or anything, so I had to have protein. Hal had to leave at the crack of dawn, and so he learned to make omelets. And, you know, guys thrive under responsibility. I love it.
Hal and Melanie Young are the parents of 8, including 6 boys ages 8 to adult, and 2 girls. Their book, Raising Real Men, Surviving, Teaching, and Appreciating Boys, is a practical guide to reaching the hearts and minds of boys without breaking or losing your own. To read a sample chapter or to order your copy, visit the website at www.raisingrealmen.com. This is a copyrighted recording. For additional copies or licensing information, contact us at info@greatwaterspress.com. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin. The performance is provided by amclassical.com. Thank you, and God bless you for listening.